So, we are here having an interview with Mary Miller about her own experiences with the Lawrence Unitarian Fellowship and other related matters. And I do want to say at the outset that we are hoping to make this a public record freely available, and we'll let you make a final judgment when you're done, but we do want these stories to be out. We think there are a lot of tales that need to be told, so we hope that's okay. So, if you have something you want to start out saying, that's fine. Otherwise, I can ask questions.
Well, I was just going to take the first one you had on here about my background in other religions. I was reared a Presbyterian, and I went to a Presbyterian college, Park College, right across the river from Kansas City. This was back in the 40s, and I had, at that time, people would have bull sessions till the wee hours of the morning, and the subjects were either religion or sex. So I will talk about the religious one. So that was, I had just always considered myself a Presbyterian, but I wasn't a strong one. I went to Sunday school because I was supposed to and all that sort of thing. So it wasn't until I got to Park when I really had a clear idea of what Presbyterians thought or what a lot of various religions were into. And the way that it was taught was very objective, and it taught how the churches were governed, which I never thought anything about, and a lot of things that were not spiritual. They were just very practical. But this was in a period in which there was quite a bit of skepticism at the college that I went to, and after I found out what all various religions believed, I thought, I'm not any one of these, for heaven's sakes. So that began my skeptical, or my search for something different that I could participate in and feel that I was on the right track. So, what else would you follow up with?
So, how did that go from, how'd you get from there to Unitarians?
Well, at Park College at this particular time, there were a lot of skeptics, and they every year they would have a religious emphasis week. And by golly, one year nobody showed up at anything except the skeptics' corner, and they had to move it to the chapel because it was such a large group. So from then on, I decided from my denominationalism class that I must be either a Unitarian or a Reformed Jew. So it was much easier to become a Unitarian. So of course we hashed this all over among all my roommates and so forth, and came to the conclusion that several of us were really Unitarians.
Now, at that point, you're still at Park College, right?
Right.
So how'd you get to Lawrence?
Okay. After graduation, my former husband went to Washington U in St. Louis, and I had to work on Sundays, so I really wanted to pursue the Unitarian group in St. Louis, but I didn't have a chance to then. So then when we moved to Peoria, Illinois was my first opportunity to go to a church like that. Only it turned out to be Universalist, which was a lot more spiritually oriented than the other churches that I had been to. So we did join there, but when we moved to Rockford, Illinois, was my first opportunity to go to a real Unitarian church, and it was a church with a minister and a church building and so forth, and some instruction before you joined about just what you were getting into. And so that was really my first time to be satisfied that I had found something that I could go along with. So when we came to Lawrence, we lived in Rockford and then came to Lawrence in the late 1950s, 1958. And we were very relieved to learn that a Unitarian fellowship had started just before we decided to move here. That meant we didn't have to organize one ourselves. So let's see where I was going with that. This was an era of do-it-yourself. There were all sorts of magazines about how you could build your own cabinets and do all these things yourself. Well, one of the things this group tried to do was to build their own fellowship and do it without a minister and without the burdensome things that you might have to do if you were following a certain dogma or a certain way of going at things. So we were very fortunate to find this group here in Lawrence, and it turned out that they had just started the year before, in 1957. It was this do-it-yourself thing. The organization in Boston, and that is the headquarter of the Unitarians, had a fellow Monroe husbands who would come out to small groups who were wanting to know how to form a fellowship. And so Amby Sarek, somebody who was quite important here in the university, contacted him, and he came out, and eventually they formed a fellowship that was really quite successful. I noticed that one of the questions that Tim gave me was on early day Unitarians. And in this group that helped form the fellowship, there were several physicians. Dr. Gillis, maybe some of you who grew, if you grew up in Lawrence, you would have had her as a pediatrician. Several physicians and a number of important people at the university. Amby Sarek, I think, was vice chancellor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was.
Bill Balfour, who was provost, or not quite, that isn't
something
quite the
like
name.
A dean of students,
well,
maybe.
Plus Shelton, ombudsman.
Ombudsman, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Uh-huh. And later on, there was Sherry Rowland, who won a Nobel Peace Prize for, I think it was greenhouse gases, something environmental. But he was my daughter's third grade Sunday school teacher. We didn't have many Nobel Prize winners as Sunday school teachers. But again, it was this do-it-yourself sort of thing. Also, you notice the theater at KU is the Crafton Prior Theater. Crafton was in the fellowship and was quite a theatrical person. So we had some very good programs. And this is another thing that we did by ourselves. We didn't have a minister and didn't want a minister at that time. But we had some very talented people who were willing to put on a program each Sunday. Let's see, who else was... Oh, I know, it was Sintra. Mm-hmm.
You said that the first church that you were involved with was very spiritual. What's the practice of your...
Yeah, now, wait a minute, I didn't hear what you say, a spiritual one?
You said the first church that you participated in for the Unitarian was very spiritual.
If I said that, I didn't mean it. We were more humanistic.
Than so what's the foundation of universalism, right?
Universalism, yes.
Yeah.
That would be. Okay. So anyway, let's see. Crafton was one of these. And Centron, where the Old Father Studios is over on 9th Street, is a former building of Centron, which was a quite a successful movie producer in the 50s and 60s. So a number of the people from Centron came to the fellowship, and they would do play readings and things like that that were really, really neat. So am I heading the direction
you
want me to go? Interrupted me. So I think it was the people, this is why were people attracted to this religious body. There are a bunch of negatives that I can tell you that, the Unitarians were called, or which they enjoyed being called, and that was that Unitarians didn't have any dogma, so you were responsible for your own dogma or your own humanism. And that isn't what I meant there. Okay. There was no dogma, no proselytizing. In fact, you could keep coming forever before somebody would be so churchy as to say that they were glad you came. You think, do these people hate me? Well, no, they just don't want to proselytize. So it's kind of kooky. But then for years we were trying to overcome that. We were trying to say, no, we've got to quit talking in our little groups afterwards and take care of some of these people. But who knows? So no dogma, no proselytizing. No pressure for money. People were very tired of having a church group come to them and say, you really need to pay us so much money so we can support this church. And people were very prone to dislike that. And to this day, they do not pass a collection basket. That was too much pressure. Okay. Also, we didn't have a minister until just this past year. So for about 50 years, we operated on our own. We did it all. And I think we did a pretty good job. But this is a different era. This is a more spiritual era. And people want things, people coming into the fellowship now want more traditional sorts of things, and there has been some conflict over that, but we settled it by saying we'll have two services instead of one. So one of our services is spiritual, and the other one is more reasonable, more give and take. Hopefully, the program speaker will be stimulated, or rather will stimulate the audience to talk among themselves and debate some of the ideas that were presented in the program. Okay, so what we do stress then would be reason, humanism, atheism, and agnosticism. So there are a number of people that are willing to admit that they're atheists. And even more, I guess, agnosticism. So this led to the attitude by many townspeople that all Unitarian fellowship was a glorified country club. And we said, okay, you know, we were having a good time and doing it our way, and so that was it. So there was a certain mocking to this. We felt a little superior, you know, but we got over it, I guess. right now we have a half-time minister whom we like a lot, I think. She's quite remarkable to step into the kind of place where the old members are questioning the new members and so forth and not quite sure where they're going to stick together or not. And so she's done a good job. Let's see. Ask me something, Tim.
Dr. Okay.
I'm
Okay.
You mentioned earlier how, you know, when you were beginning to learn about all the different churches and things, uh-huh. something didn't feel right, you didn't really like it. I was just wondering, what was it about those, you know, religions or those churches that made you so skeptical?
Well, to start out with the biggie, it would be the miracles and other discussions about angels dancing on the heads of pins and things like that. So my roommates and I have really stirred things up together and tried to get it all figured out. So was that all? Did I give you that?
Oh, yeah. I was just wondering if there was, you know, something kind of in general with the belief or with the church themselves that made you realize, you know, I just don't think this is for me. Uh-huh.
No, it was with the beliefs. Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'll go into some history, early history, that involves Lawrence. And I don't know how many of you are from Lawrence, but if you are from here, you probably know some of the dates and founders and so forth. So Lawrence was founded in 1854, and one of the major groups that founded it were the Unitarians from Massachusetts. Massachusetts Immigrant Society was made up in a large part, but not completely, by Unitarians. And they formed a group to come to Kansas to be here to vote against slavery. So they were an abolitionist group. And the bell down in the high school lobby, Lawrence High School lobby, was given by some Unitarians in Boston to the Unitarians here to be for a warning bell. Because this was before 1863, when Quantrill's raid was on. They'd already had several raids. And so one particular person, as I understand it, in Boston, donated the silver for the bell, and it was brought here under very shaky circumstances. It was had to travel up the Mississippi, and there was it wrecked a storm, and they lost it. And then when they got on up toward Kansas City, they had to be more careful about the Missouri raiders finding the bell. So they had it packed in a barrel with several layers of dishes. So you had to really be looking for something down on the bottom or you would see it. So they very courageously got the bell to Lawrence. So those were the early day Unitarians, and I'm sure they were spiritual because people just were. And Dr. Robinson, the leader of the group, was a Unitarian, as was his wife. His wife is the one who's written the book on Kansas history. And of course, this was back in the 1860s. So, let's see what else. I'll skip now ahead to when I didn't get finished with my person that came out to establish a fellowship. I'll tell you about the first meeting places there were. The Medical Arts Building down by the hospital was where they met for several times before they found another place. I think there are at least three people in the fellowship that were doctors, so they had a tie-in with that. Then when we came, the building that was in this spot, what was the name?
Myers Hall.
It was a frame building, and we borrowed it or rented it, I don't know what. But the kids were in the upstairs, and the adults were downstairs, and they used material from the publishing house in Boston, and now I've forgotten the name of it.
Beacon
Press. Sunday school material was relied on for that. And Bill Balfour, who was vice chancellor or something like that, taught the Sunday school, managed the Sunday school. In fact, some of the kids thought he owned the Sunday school. There were several things that happened. Then after Myers Hall, we moved across the street to the Union, and we would meet there every Sunday. Then it got so that the kids were under a little bit of pressure. There were some teachers in the public schools that on Monday would ask each kid what Sunday school they'd been to on the day before. And so that's pretty pushy. So the Unitarian kids didn't know what to say, so they said they belonged to the Strong Hall Sunday school. And then another thing that happened was that the teachers would take them out for a nature hike, and they would take a little egg carton, and they were going to put little flowers or something in each hole. And they came back with cigarette butts and all that sort of thing. So the adults decided something has to be done. So, one other thing that was cute about the Strong Hall thing was that we met up on the third floor. I think that at that time there was a third floor auditorium. And we always had coffee. And that's just practically communion to Unitarians. So here we were on the third floor, and the psychology department was in the basement, and the head psychologist was also in the Unitarian Fellowship. So we had this cart, this kitchen cart, that we kept the coffee maker and the sugar and the cream and all that stuff on, in a closet down in the basement, and we'd roll it out and have coffee. So we really needed a building. And let's see. Coffee. Okay. I ran into another name here that was a prominent person, and that was George Wagoner. And he was really a strong person in the days of the university. I don't know whether you would have known anybody.
Well, he was dean of the college for quite a few years.
Yeah. And established a number of programs.
He did, yeah. It was really a great development growth period for the college.
Uh-huh. Especially the connection with foreign, the whole thing of study abroad and things like that. He was very influential in the Costa Rican program, so way back then. Okay, when we would have potlucks or things like that, we would borrow the facilities of the, not the community church, what is it? Across from the Methodist. Oh, it's a
oh,
big
the community
church.
Building? Or?
No, the big church. I'll think of it.
Plymouth?
Huh? Yeah, Plymouth. We would use their facilities for a potluck. And then for picnics, we used to go out to a schoolhouse in the country about 2.5 miles from Lawrence. And Professor or Dr. Oldfather, Charlie Oldfather, was the head of the board of the schoolhouse, of the school that was there. And so we borrowed facilities and would have our picnics out there. And he was a very prominent person in the music field. He preserved old sheets of old music for posterity, I guess. Okay, so in that era, this was early 60s, there was a movement to consolidate schools all over Kansas, and it was really quite an upsetting thing. And so it came about that they were going to abandon the school where we had been having our picnics, and they auctioned it off, and we bought it, and I'm pretty sure the price was $4,100 for this still very well-preserved school. We should check all my figures because I haven't done it recently. But if you realize that a lot of professors were not paid more than $4,100. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you got $6,000, that was pretty good. But so we bought it, and we paid off the mortgage early. Nobody got after anybody about how much money they were going to give or how much. They just simply, people wrote down on a piece of paper what they would be able to give, and they folded it up and gave it to one person, and that person added up the figures and said, yep, we got enough. And that that was it. We went ahead and built a wing onto the old school, and had it for a Sunday school. So, and since then, just within the last year, we have done a really nice remodeling job on the interior of the old one. So not only did we raise the money without a big push, we also paid off the mortgage early and had went on. Okay, now I'll have to talk about the other ramification of do-it-yourself. I think I remarked before that it was a do-it-yourself era where people built their own cabinets and did all that sort of thing. Well, a lot of the work that was done on this old schoolhouse and on the wing that had been built for the Sunday school was done by people with their PhDs and so forth. So that was a binding thing, too. Let's see. I think I'm about through. Since we're a little loosely hung together, there is a lot of variety in Unitarian groups. Each one has its own personality, and some people must get upset or something, or surprised if they go to various ones of the fellowship groups because they're all different. And one thing that has changed is people are no longer afraid of being churchy. I told you that people didn't come to the fellowship or weren't greeted when they came. Okay. Oh, then another thing that Dr. Miller is involved in, he's a licentiate for the fellowship. We didn't have anybody in our own group who could legally marry people. So it happened that one of the head fellows in the Attorney General's office in Topeka was a Unitarian. And so he helped us with this difficulty that we had, and they got that changed so that now we have, I think, 3 licentiates, and you can pick your own. I think that's it.
Who was that in the Attorney General's office?
I can't remember.
I thought
his
Eldon
name.
Fields always did that services.
Oh, Eldon would not have been he could legally marry somebody until this Attorney General office person got somebody to say that they could. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then as for funerals, the Unitarians are known for their meaningful funeral or memorial services. And now I think this is one of the things that other churches have followed along with. I think they're a lot more compassionate and reflective of the person's life and so forth than funerals used to be. Funerals used to be just a sermon. And not any that would one would fit all, you know. But we have several people in the fellowship that are really very good at putting together a compassionate memorial service. Okay. Then it said, how did your membership and participation affect your own private life outside of the religious group? I think that for myself, I chose several organizations that I wanted to work in at that stage of my life when my children were young and I wasn't working. And at one time, almost all the people on the League of Women Voters board were Unitarians. And then there were other groups like the LLPD, Lawrence League for the Practice of Democracy. And I think that's all I'll mention right now.
Could you describe what the LLPD was? I suspect most people don't know, but that was an important piece of Lawrence history.
Yes, it was. They helped get a swimming pool. Is that what you're thinking of? They prayed it. We were out of town, so we missed it. But there was an Olympia pool over here someplace. And it was the only pool in town except for the private ones. But the blacks weren't allowed to use it. And so the LLPD organized to help, and Petey Cerf, who is quite a mover and shaker, got it so the Lawrence League got it so the swimming pools would, not the private ones, but the public ones, were open for the black people.
So Unitarians were really pretty important civil rights pioneers.
Yes.
That's what that comes down to.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It does, really, yeah. And they still are. I'm not as active, but their number, we went to a meeting today about the migrant workers and so forth. And it wasn't Unitarians particularly, but that's one of the things that the Unitarians are working on now. Okay.
Well, let me see if I can just get a little bit more. You talked about the Sunday school a little bit. Can you describe it maybe in a way relating more to your family? What did your children do? How did they?
After they got through picking up cigarette butts, you mean?
Right.
Well, they were quite enthusiastic Sunday school kids. And there were games and activities and so forth. When they got to be in junior high, the Unitarian group in Boston put out a program on human sexuality. And we had that running for several years. I think it still goes when they have a group of kids that haven't had it. But it was supposed to be one of the leading programs and one of the best planned for sex education. And this was back in the, let's see, was it 50s or 60s? 60s, I guess, early 60s. And other churches have used that same program. But then in junior high, they had a liberal religious youth group for the junior hires and senior hires. And boy, oh boy, talk about worry. they were very liberal. Liberal religious youth, yeah. But that same gang still gets together. They live in Omaha and Kansas City and all around, and boy, they come here and get together I'm not sure it's every year, but darn near it, yeah.
Were there any conflicts?
Oh, yes.
what kinds of things would be argued about?
Well, let's see. There was this was early, a group, well, it was a gay and lesbian thing, and several people from the lesbian group came and wanted to use the Unitarian facility. And that really brought out the feelings on that sort of thing. It turned out that they just kind of dropped it, I guess, because I never heard it. And again, I was gone for part of that, out of town. But part of it was a legitimate concern that our building was way out in the country and could be so easily vandalized, and that it would, another reason they was that somebody would have to stay with the building and close it up at night and all that, and we didn't have, we never hired a janitor at that point or anything like that. So it got postponed, and now the Unitarians are some of the leading ones for an open group, pro group for lesbians. The whole list of I can't do it. I don't know.
Oh, you mean like lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual? Yeah.
So the Unitarians are very supportive of those groups belonging, and I think we probably have a number who have come to Lawrence. And then as for my own kids, I never knew whether they would keep on being Unitarians or not, and I determined that I was not going to force them to. And so one of my daughters is in some sort of co-op place. Yeah. You know, great, what would you call
Diane?
It? Huh? Diane, yeah. She was on a co-op farm.
Yeah,
but now she's
Two Rivers Farm.
Yeah, yeah. So Shelley used to say, I don't know how these people find each other. And then another of my daughters went to a Unitarian church as long as she lived near one. But now she's not within commuting a distance of that. And then another one was a Unitarian all her life. And then my son isn't much of anything. And I don't push him. So.
Are there any other really memorable characters that you haven't mentioned?
Oh, we always have at least one person that's kind of way out there somewhere, you know. And I think it's good for us. We can be kind of smug and know that we're PhDs and all that sort of thing. But these other people kind of let us know differently.
What's the size of your fellowship? How many people?
Gosh, I was afraid somebody would ask me that.
Sorry.
I think it's around 150,
yeah,
isn't it? In the early days, if we got 40, we thought we were doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. But another group really has taken over a lot of the fellowship, and they're the spiritual group. And again, I think that's the way people are moving now, is more toward a spirituality type thing. And the rest of us will have to wait till the next cycle of skepticism comes around, I guess.
So you mentioned that you've been to Unitarian churches outside of Kansas?
Yeah, not very many.
Okay, well, I was just wondering, like, with your experience with those other churches, is there something that, you know, you've noticed that might be different or uniquely Kansas about, you know, your experience here in Lawrence?
Let's see. Well, I don't know if it's uniquely Kansas. At times we have shared a minister, or Topeka has shared a minister with Manhattan or something like that. A lot of times we copy from each other. And they'll say, oh, they do that in Manhattan, so let's try it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What about differences among the Kansas Unitarian?
There's differences within our fellowship, but I don't think the Kansas Unitarians have been that cohesive that that.
Can you describe the facility physically beyond what you've said? I mean, are there distinctive religious symbols or anything
we,
like
we
that?
We have a chalice that is part of the service. It's just a pretty little bowl with a stand on it, and it has a little alcohol flame, I guess. I don't know what it is. And it's a Unitarian Universalist symbol, not just for Lawrence, but... and then I brought, in to counteract the part about everything being negative, I copied off the seven principles, and supposedly this is about as close as we come to a dogma, and I'll read them real quickly. There are seven principles which Unitarian Universalist congregations affirm and promote. Number one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Number two, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Number three, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth of our congregations. Number four, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Then the right of conscience and the use of democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Next one is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And the last one is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And that would be your ecological considerations. So you can find that on the web.
Did you ever have a time when you thought about leaving? You wasn't serving your needs? And
well, lately. I'm recovering. All this business about spirituality and so forth doesn't sit well with me. So I like a reasonable approach to things and discussion of it and so forth. So, but there are a number of young families that... seem to want a meld of the spirituality and the churchiness. Yeah.
When you say spirituality, could you clarify what you mean? Are you indicating a belief in, other realms, I would assume a form of Christianity that you might perceive as being merged with this? I mean, could you clarify?
Oh, probably not. Let's see. Well, here are some of the outward things that I see. This responsive readings, unless they really say something, I don't care for that. And that really doesn't fill it, though. What would I mean about spirituality?
Do you follow the Bible?
You can, yeah. Quite often, service will begin with a reading, but it's not necessarily from the Bible. It'll be from Thoreau or Franklin or, somebody. But I haven't answered your question.
That's right. Would it be more along the lines of an affirmation of an afterlife, the soul, or is that what these people, you think they seek to affirm or?
They would be comfortable with the word soul, and they would use a deity more often, refer to a deity.
And but these concepts, which might be imposing upon the Unitarian Church right now, were not initially a part of it, or at least during your time, you don't think they were really that much of a problem?
Oh, yes. There were always some people that in our group that were urging for more spirituality, and I guess everybody interpreted that their own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you worship God?
Not necessarily. Yeah.
So if atheists were to attend your church, what? Because you mentioned them, how would they participate?
Well, they would probably believe that and there was at most one God, and they would not, for instance, if they weren't quite atheists, they might be agnostics and question things. And what was the other word I was going to use? I'm getting short on words. I can't get it. They would be more skeptical, and you'll have to wait. I can't get that one right now to just do define it.
Could you describe how a typical service would go? What is involved in the service? You indicated that there are readings or other. What other kinds of activities compromise a typical service?
Yeah. Well, we have several musicians in our group that can add to any service, but also our services start out with the lighting of candles, of the chalice, and reading something that's meaningful to the group. And let's see, I'm beginning to wear out.
The chalice is the bowl that you were talking about.
Yeah, it's the symbol of truth and so forth. And let's see, give me your question again, and I'll get back on track. Oh, your question again.
Just to describe how a typical service.
Okay. There is a special hymnal for Unitarians, and it was said that the reason Unitarians are such bad singers is because they're always trying to read ahead to see if they agree with the words. So there is, there can or cannot be, depending. The first service is at Fellowship is more spiritually constituted, and they would have more hymn singing and more responsive readings and things like that. The second group would want time for some sort of a discussion, and they would feel cheated if they didn't get time to mull things over a bit. So there would be that. So did you have your hand up?
That was the same thing I was going
I still didn't answer yours today. I'm looking for a word, and I haven't found it. So, sorry.
What do you think is the future of Unitarianism?
Oh, boy.
Looking ahead a ways, is this going to be something that's going to... I mean, it's pretty small now. It's not a big movement nationally. Is it going to be something that eventually will catch on in a big way, or is it going to continue marginally, or will it fade out altogether? Do you have any... sense of direction?
I think the whole country is moving to more spiritual type services and songs and that sort of thing. And therefore, people will be looking for something like that along with their, as they look toward religion, as they and as they expect more religious services, that some of them will again feel that Unitarians are more to their liking, because it is an alternative.
Well, I've wondered a little bit. Participation in American religion across the board is gradually going down. The long-term trend is...
Is that right?
It's not severe, but it's very slowly, gradually. Mm-hmm. Church attendance goes down a little bit, and belief in God is going down a little bit. But slowly but surely, it seems like. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, I don't know this in my own mind, but I've been curious, will Unitarianism follow that trend and start fading down, or will it? Is it different enough? It'll rise up and fill the gap. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, I don't. I guess I don't worry about it.
Okay. Do any of you have any other last questions?
If I ever think of the answer to yours, I'll let you know.
Okay.
So do you personally believe in a God, or do you just do it for the community?
I don't believe in God, and for a long time I was not, I couldn't quite bring myself to say that out loud. But and so at that time I decided I was at least an agnostic, that I never would know whether there was a God or not, and therefore I think you choose the best type of life you can.
So do you participate just for the community?
Excuse me?
Do you participate in it just for the community unity?
Participate in the...
The church.
In the church. Yeah, it's most of my friends are there, and we most of us believe similarly. I wouldn't say that we are exact, because that would be good. But, that's there, and a few social movements like League of Women Voters are what I sort of get my inspiration from. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's a little personal.
Okay.
I said I'm sorry, that was a little personal. I was just kidding.
No, that's all right. That's all right. You know, I should be able to.
Did ever your Unitarianism ever get you in trouble? Like you taught... You taught Spanish in a pretty small town environment. Yeah. Did anyone take offense? Or?
Well, one girl told me it was just about Christmas time, and she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she was challenging me and telling me that she could not participate in any Christmas festivities. And I told her it was part of the culture, that I wouldn't make her participate, but she had to know what it was, what they did. So that was all. Hmm. Oh, no, there was one. the coach brought in a bunch of military guys, and they had these plastic guns. I mean, you know, they looked like the real thing. And they had all the boys come up during lunch hour, you know, and I just went sky high. And I raced to the phone, and this is down in Baldwin. I don't live in Baldwin. And I called Mr. Oh, shoot, I just had it. Dabney?
Uh-huh.
And told him what was going on. And he came down and had a little talk with the principal. And so that was, I felt that was a religious thing.
What was the purpose of them having all this?
What?
What was the purpose of them having the fake guns?
Oh, well, they were... This was... let's see, what was going on? No, this is past the Vietnam era. They were just recruiting, really, with the help of this coach. And he'd pat them on the back, you know. Oh. Anyway, I couldn't tell.
Okay.
But you mentioned that after the service that they'll have the congregation will have coffee afterwards.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And it's the ongoing joke that, you know, Unitarian Universalist Church is on fire, the minister runs in and grabs a coffee pot.
But, yes.
But
I'm drinking coffee.
Well, but I've been to a couple of services there at the Unitarian Church.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering,
out here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. With the little red coffee mugs for visitors.
I hope somebody was nice to you.
Yes. But I was just wondering if you could maybe comment on how important is that period of time after the service proper to the whole experience of the community, where when the service is officially over, but everyone runs downstairs and has coffee and then mulls over it. How
how important is that? Could that be considered a significant part of the service, even though it's technically not part of it?
I think you should, would assume that, yeah, because it's we laugh about it. In fact, one minister up in Omaha made up this song, Coffee, Coffee, Coffee. The old, what is it? Holy, holy, holy one.
Is that the community church that's right off 9th Street?
No, no.
No?
No. Yeah, now there would be a contrast.
Yeah, but is this off of, it's south on Iowa past 31st.
Uh-huh. Go past the Wakarusa Bridge, and there is a sign there on the right. It says it points to the Unitarian Fellowship. Yeah, you have to look for it.
You don't want visitors, huh?
Oh,
I'm just kidding.
No, no.
If you have to
just
look for it,
it'd be
very welcoming to us.
Well, all I can say to sum it up is that it's been important in my life and been important in my kids' lives. So. Anything that you can find that you hope helps you be a better person, well, then go for it.
Well, I really appreciate your coming in. This is nice. Nice. I want to reiterate, we're trying to gather the stories and make them available, and then to me, this is an important part of it all.
Right.
So appreciate your doing it.